Hi, welcome to the What in the World is Discount Coolia podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Honora Wall, and What in the World is Discount Coolia is sponsored by EduCalc Learning. EduCalc Learning is a company that offers teacher training, classes for homeschool students, and guidance on the math learning disability. I'm also the founder and executive director of the Discalculia Coolia Training and Research Institute. That is a nonprofit organization that works with school districts, state departments of education, and schools for a variety of trainings and research topics around Discalculia Coolia. And that's what we talk about in this podcast. So this is the first episode of season three, and we have some goals this year. I'm glad you're going to be part of this journey with us. One is to bring you a lot more research from a variety of researchers doing some excellent work in the field of dyscalculia. That's really important because the published research of dyslexia compared to dyscalculia is running about 10 to 1 right now. We have some great stuff out there about the math learning disability, but we need a lot more. And the first step is to raise awareness and talk about dyscalculia and encourage more researchers to join us in getting more studies underway and out into some peer-reviewed journals. Another big goal we have for the podcast this season is to bring you more guests and to have more discussion with other leaders in the field and other education leaders who are talking about social emotional learning and executive function issues and all sorts of topics. If you have an idea for a topic that you'd like to know more about or someone you'd like to see included in our podcast, please reach out to me. I'm pretty easy to find. First, you can email me at Honora, Honora, at educalclearning.com or Honora at thedtri.org. So let's jump into today's topic. And I wanted to start with a research study that I found just fascinating. I included in all of my training for teachers around dyscalculia ever since I came across it. It's really an exciting one. And this came from, here we go, Dr. Katie Lewis, who is in Washington State. And she is a professor, and she did this research study on dyscalculia with one of her college students who has dyscalculia and was studying to become a statistician, to study statistics, and did that very successfully. So Dr. Lewis wanted to know, how did she get to that point in her journey? Because a lot of college students with dyscalculia do not study math. And sadly, a lot of people with dyscalculia have trouble getting into college or successfully staying in college because of the math class requirements. The problem there is not the math or the math class. It's usually the setup and the structure. A lot of times in college, students don't get the kind of accommodations and support that they should. And a lot of math professors haven't really heard about dyscalculia and aren't sure what it is or what they should do to support students who have it. So definitely need more awareness in the higher ed sphere. And here's a great research study for math professors to start with, but it also has really good information in the K-12 system. Here's what the study found in a nutshell. Going to jump right to the summary section rather than go through the methodology and participant description. In future podcasts, we might do that, but I'm not sure how many people listening really want to take a deep dive into the statistics of qualitative and quantitative research studies. If you do, let me know. I'm happy to talk more about those details. But what Dr. Lewis found when she did a case study with her student was that this particular young woman had spent most of her K-12 experience supporting herself in her math struggles. Common story, her teachers were not aware of dyscalculia, what it is, where it comes from, and what the hallmark features are, or how to best support students. So she was not getting a lot of direct and explicit instruction. Consistently, she didn't have a lot of accommodations for having notes or her examples with her during assessments. That was tricky. And then what do you do with extended time? That really has to be trained. So there were some key struggles. She was able to successfully compensate and learn what worked best for her through a lot of trial and error. And one thing that really became clear in this study was the incredible amount of time this student had to spend outside of class, much, much greater than what any neurotypical student spends, even those who have straight A's and who study and really devote themselves to being good at math. Having dyscalculia, this student really had to fight a lot harder. So some of the things she found that were very successful for her. The first was finding and using her preferred type of graph paper. She used four squares per inch, the very oversized, so she could really see what was going on. And this helped her align her math problems and space out her work so that later she could really see what was going on. She had plenty of space to work with. She found that using one particular kind of pencil and eraser worked best for her. And this makes a lot of sense to me. If you've tried using different pencils and erasers, or sometimes using pen, you know that the thickness, the quality, the sharpness of a pencil, that all makes a difference in your writing style, whether or not you can really see your work later. And it can even impact the feeling. If I'm using a pencil, it has to be sharp enough to kill. Otherwise, I'm constantly sharpening it. I don't like a dull pencil. Also, when you're using different kinds of erasers, some erasers are only an eraser in name. They don't actually erase anything, they just smudge everything around on your paper. Makes it very distracting and hard to work with. Sometimes they just make your paper fall apart, and sometimes they just crumble and disintegrate. So, in order to avoid any of those frustrations and make sure she knew that when she was working, everything would go smoothly, she stuck to one consistent brand. You may or may not find that when you're finding your own support tools, but consider that because every aspect of practicing math can impact your experience. And we want to make it as smooth as possible. That way it's enjoyable. You're going to remember more. You're going to feel good about it. You're more likely to do the work later. So keep all these things in mind. She also used a lot of colored pens, which I'm also a huge fan of. What this student would do is make her own color coding system for her notes so that she used certain colors to trigger either certain operations or certain examples. For me, I use color a lot with geometry, so I can really train people exactly where to look, and we're matching vocabulary with the shape or the part of an object or the specific angle or sides we need to focus on. So color is a very effective tool. You don't want to make everything a different rainbow color. You want to have some meaning or consistency behind it so that it draws your focus. And this one made a lot of sense to me after having worked with students who have dyscalculia, but the amount of time I just felt very much for this student. When she would go home after class and rewrite her notes, which she did all the time, instead of using those mathematical symbols like a plus sign, a minus sign, parentheses for distributive property, things like that, she would rewrite everything using words. So instead of an Arabic digit of three, the plus sign, Arabic digit of five, this is my example I'm using for you. She would write out three, THREE space, plus PLUS space 5 FIVE. That way, when she was reading it later, she had a narrative. And I do find a lot of my students with dyscalculia prefer this method when we're trying to figure out how they can write notes that will help them prepare for an assessment. You really want to practice having a future conversation with yourself. Harder than it sounds. So it might take you a few tries before you really land on something that works best for you. Some students will write step one, step two, step three next to their worked examples, or they might put full sentences. Now, of course, if a student has dyslexia or dysgraphia, that might not be their first choice, but you could also use a voice to text to help out with that. But anything that will help the notes make sense to you later, because a lot of students with dyscalculia find that they will take excellent notes, and within 24 hours, they can look back at those notes and go, well, I have no idea what I meant. So play around with note taking and give yourself the space to see what works, what doesn't, and make some changes. A couple of other things this student did was to create a running dictionary for herself. And this contained the different mathematical symbols, what they meant. We use so much shorthand, especially in upper level math. And we do that because mathematicians like to make things as efficient and simple as possible. You might not know it when you're trying to teach yourself upper level math for sure, but it is a way of making things very smooth and fast, quick and efficient. But if you're not sure how to interpret those symbols, then they're not very helpful, and you're not going to get that meaning. Excuse me. So, very dusty here today. I'm doing this longer podcast. I should have made a hot tea. All right. So, this dictionary she would build out over time. So, it made sense to her. She would rewrite any problems from class in a format that was consistent for her and the way that she could best solve them. And she used a consistent solution style every time. That way, she wasn't having to constantly look for the best option for a certain thing. She knew exactly what to do. And she had to spend a lot of time trying to find real-world examples for herself. That's a good message for us as teachers. We need to spend some more time taking abstract concepts and making them real-world examples our students can connect with. The important thing to remember when we're doing that is that we don't live in their world and they don't live in ours. So something that's real world for an adult is not going to be a real world example for a student. So just think about math differently, and you can really teach any math class in the room you're sitting in. Your real world examples can come from the concrete in your immediate vicinity. They can come from your local park. They can come from the classroom. They can come from your house, driving to and from school. But a lot of our word problems, especially in most of our math curriculums, don't really do that. So spend more time talking with your students with dyscalculia and see if you can make some real-world examples in the space you're in, because that truly is the world that you're both sharing. So, if you want to know more about that study, look up Dr. Katie Lewis. She does have other research studies out there, a lot of really great information. And I think this is a great way for us to bridge that gap between research studies and what we can do practically in the classroom. I come from a pragmatic lens for my frame of reference around education. What do we need to do and how do we get it done? And for most of our students, what they need to do is pass math class so that they can maintain grade level work and progression, so that they can graduate high school, so that they can complete their college degree and open up more career choices, more earning pathways, and have a better understanding of themselves as students and as learners. I can tell you from my work, absolutely, students with dyscalculia can and should do upper level math and science classes. They're more than capable, Those classes are much easier than elementary school. Elementary math is much harder for people with dyscalculia. And if we look at examples like the student Dr. Lewis included in this study, there's no reason why dyscalculia should keep a person from reaching any of their goals, including majoring in math and using that as the way to finish their college degree. Last goal for this new year is to have summaries and links to some of these research studies on both of the websites. So if you want to know more about this study right now, go to Google Scholar, or go to Google itself and type in Dr. Katie Lewis and find her, and you can find more of her work. In the near future, keep checking our websites and look for more research studies to be included in that space. And then, of course, we have lots of reels on social media. If you're looking for some quick bites of information, we have a support group for teachers on Facebook. That's a public group where you can meet colleagues and ask questions. And you can email me anytime. I'm Dr. Honora Wall. I love talking about dyscalculia, and I thank you for being a part of this journey and listening to the What in the World is Dyscalculia podcast.